Hello everyone. Sorry there's no crazy intro music for this one, but I just wanted to say I'm sorry. This is the first podcast I've done in 3 weeks. First thing I posted my article in 2 weeks. I've been on vacation, I've been away, I haven't had the time, so I'm sorry about that, guys. Let's get into this episode. It's going to be a jam-packed episode. We're doing the over-under win totals for a bunch of new teams. I know that's a really popular series. We are doing the top weaknesses of the top teams in the country. Big 12 expansion talk still. Cam Robinson getting off the hook. The worst missed field goals. An update on the Heisman race. Guest balls on job security. And many, many more things. So let's get into it with our first issue. And that is Gus Malzahn. So Gus Malzahn has got to step up his game. Now, Auburn has done fine in recent years. They won 7 games last year. They won 9 games a few years before. They went to the national title game 3 or 4 years ago also. But the problem is, they're in the same conference as Alabama. And since Gus Malzahn got the reins, Alabama has beat them year in and year out. And Auburn's been dropping recently. They went from winning 10 games a year to winning 9. Now they're winning 7 games a year. And the problem with being in the same state as Alabama is people can expect you to compete with Alabama. And the problem with Auburn is they're not going to do that with this set of talent. I'm sorry, but it's not going to happen. Alabama's the best. They're the most talented team in the country. Auburn's probably a top 30 team. That's not bad. Maybe top 25. It's just people want to compare them to Alabama, and they're just not there right now. And that's why I'm worried that Gus Malzahn's going to lose his job. I don't think he should. I think Gus Malzahn is doing a good job at Auburn. He's just being held to unfair standards because of their in-state rivals, Alabama. And, you know, that's not fair because Auburn will do fine this year. They have a lot of key players back. They had a fine recruiting class, too. Like I said, Gus Malzahn has been a good coach. He's been recruiting well. He's been coaching well. The problem is, like I said, he's in the same state as Alabama, and people expect you to beat your rivals or at least be as good as them. And the problem with Auburn is they're just not. That's the hard truth. But Auburn is not as good as Alabama, and that's just the way it is. So I see Gus Malzahn probably. I would see that Gus Malzahn will probably be fired if they don't get to 8 wins. If they have another 7-win year, I could see him gone. That includes bowl wins, by the way. And I do think Auburn will get up near 8 wins or 7 wins. Let's just say, as long as he has a winning record, I doubt they'll fire him. They just signed him to an extension a few months ago. So don't think they'll fire him unless he absolutely trashes the team and they go 4-8. But if he does, just know it's probably not because Auburn didn't do good. It's just because Alabama did better. So now I was just talking with someone a few days ago, and they said, "Hey Thomas," because that's my name, "what do you think is the worst missed field goal of all time?" And I'm going to play a few clips for you guys. And you can leave your responses in the comments below. Note, if you're worried, no one else can see your comments other than me, unless you want me to make them public. So don't be worried about offending anyone, if you're a Florida State fan and you choose wide right. I'm just going to play these 3 nominees, and we're going to see which one you guys think is the worst. And I'll give my opinion, too, at the end.
This will be a 34-yard try, and this is for a win. This could be for a national championship. It's up. Destined to the right.
So as you guys obviously know, that was wide right 1, arguably the most famous missed kick in college football history. Between Miami and Florida State, because it was a crazy rivalry. It's the end of the game, and with 29 seconds left, kicker, 34-yard field goal, seems pretty easy, just hooks it to the right, and There's wide right 2, wide right 3, and they're all Florida State, Miami. It's crazy. It's not like sort of a trend, but I was the one that started it all, like he said in the video. That's goosebumps, man. Like, this is for the victory and might be for a national championship. And he just hooks it to the right on such a simple field goal. That's our first nominee.
Now it's time for Brosman to deliver. This from 26.
So there was that, and then there was also this.
This from 29. This is turning into a disaster for Brotsman. He misses from 26. What could have been the game winner in regulation, and now in the first overtime, he misses from 29, and Nevada will have a chance to pull the upset.
Taz, both of these kicks have been straight on, no angle, and he pushed the one in regulation, and he hooked this one.
So, both of those, crazy. First one with about 1 or 2 seconds left in regulation, dead on from 26 yards away. Easy chip shot, right? He misses it. And the great thing about this is what makes it such an iconic moment. ESPN actually put the score, the main field goal, up for Boise State. It was 31-31, and they just put it up to 34-31 because it was such an easy field goal. It was straight on from 26 yards away, and they ended up having to subtract the points. And then, again, in overtime, he has another chance to win it from, I think, 29 yards out. Again, a chip shot. Straight on, no angles like I said in the video, and he misses again. And this is all while Boise State was number 4 in the country and was possibly on their way to becoming a group of 5 team that would make the BCS, at the time, the BCS championship game. And they got upset by Nevada because of these 2 missed kicks. It was really unfortunate, and I just didn't clear that one. I guess it's not as big necessarily as wide right or as well known, but the fact that it happened twice in just such a short span, very deflating for Boise State. And now we've got our third one, and this is probably the one that everybody thought of immediately when I talked about this question. It's the one I thought of immediately. It's the kick six. So, of course, that's the most recent one. The Kick 6, 2013 Iron Bowl. It's funny, I was just talking about Auburn-Alabama rivalry. This is where Alabama and Auburn are tied 28-28, 1 second left in the game. And Alabama takes a 57-yard field goal. Now, they don't have a great kicker. And a lot of people at the time were questioning the decision. Why would you risk it? You probably have a better chance to just do a Hail Mary, to be honest. Your kicker's not that good. They had missed many closer kicks earlier in the game, and the announcers, as you heard, they better watch out for the blocked kick. Well, it wasn't a blocked kick. The kick from 57 yards was short and was returned by Chris Davis all the way for a touchdown and a win, and Auburn upsetting number 1 ranked Alabama, really hurting their dreams of a national championship. So that was the year that Auburn really flourished, and that's my personal pick for the worst missed field goal of all time, because it's a field goal they didn't need to take. There's 1 second left. They could have just waited to overtime, but they missed it, and it got returned. So next up, I'm going to give you a little update on the Heisman situation. The current top 10 from the odds books are, at number 10, Royce Freeman. Number 9, Josh Rosen. Number 8, Nick Chubb. Number 7, Baker Mayfield, which seems really low to me. I would put Baker Mayfield in the top 5, maybe even, no, probably top 5. Behind Watson, McCaffrey, Fournette, and Cook. But yeah, I think number 7 seems to be a little high for, I guess a little low. I don't know, the number's too high, which means, never mind, you know what I mean. He should be higher up on the list, but a lower number in the ranking. It's just confusing. Anyway, sorry. number 6, Dalvin Cook. Really? I don't have Dalvin Cook up at number 4. Right up there on Baker Mayfield. Number 5, Chad Kelly, quarterback, Mississippi. And number 4, JT Barrett. Those last two seem to be a little bit high. And then, of course, the top 3, Chris McCaffrey, Leonard Fournette, and Deshaun Watson. I would definitely agree that those are the top 3. Not necessarily in that order. I would have probably Watson number 1, McCaffrey 2. No, I would have Watson, then Fournette, then McCaffrey, then Dalvin Cook, then Baker Mayfield. That's how I would have my top 5 if I was doing a Heisman betting odds today. So that's my update on the state of the Heisman. That's what, in my opinion, the Heisman ranking should look like. They don't, but just swap JT Barrett and Chad Kelly for Dalvin Cook and Baker Mayfield, and we'll be good, Vegas, okay? So our next one is something else somebody asked me. They asked me, do you think a Group 5 team could ever make the playoff? Now, this is a tough question because you don't have, like, a scenario, how many wins they have. If they go undefeated with a win over at least one top 25 team, they probably have to, if they go undefeated, they probably, okay, for starters, they probably have to be out of either the American or the Mountain West. I don't see a MAC, Sun Belt, or Conference USA team making the playoff. But let's say they're out of Mountain West and or Mountain West or the American. They'd have to beat some team non-conference that was in the top 25. So, like, last year, Boise State played Ole Miss. If they'd, that, let's just say that. You got to beat Ole Miss or something like that. They have to, basically, you'd have to win a game against a ranked team in non-conference. And then second, you'd also have to, first off, obviously go undefeated. And then also have to beat, you'd have to have your conference to be good. You have to have other good teams in your conference to warrant your strength of schedule being at the top. You've got to have at least 2 or 3 top 25 wins. If you just go 12-0, but you don't beat anyone, the selection committee is not going to put you in. I could see, like, let's say, I don't know, this is just random. Let's say Houston. Let's say Houston makes it, and they beat Oklahoma non-conference. I don't think that's enough. I think they'd have to beat Oklahoma, and they'd have to have at least some other good win in the American to actually warrant being in the Heisman. Maybe they play Louisville also, so if they beat Oklahoma and Louisville, that would probably be good, but that's not the greatest example. But they'd have to win at least 2 big games. The good thing with non-conference games is if you're a Group 5 team, they're normally on the road, so that even further helps your resume. So anyway, if I think any team is going to make this year, it's obviously going to be Houston. They have the schedule. They play two top 25 teams, potential top 25 teams, non-conference. They play the American, which is the best of the Group of Five conferences. And they were the Group of Five conference to make a New Year's Six Bowl last year. So Houston does seem to have the best shot. Do I think it could happen? I think it could, but a lot of things would have to go right. You'd have to have probably a probably have to have an SEC teams with the second best team has 3 losses. I don't see an undefeated Houston. Maybe if they play this year's schedule, but let's say a generic group of five team that doesn't play Houston and doesn't play Oklahoma and Louisville, they're probably not going to get in over a two-loss SEC runner-up. So they probably, you'd have to have the SEC runner-up basically do worse, or one of the conference champions be like really flop. Like, you have to have, like, let's say, I don't know, like, you'd have the ACC Coastal to win the championship of the ACC. So the ACC is out. You have to have, like, someone from the Pac-12 win who had a bad loss in the non-conference. Like, a lot of things have to go right. You'd have to have at least two conference champions not be up to the committee standards, because there's five conference championships, four spots. So if you got to put that down to three spots because you need to stop for the group of five, you have two conference champions that aren't good. Plus, you'd have to have the SEC runner-up not be better than you. So I feel like it could happen. It would just be a tough path. So now it's time for our weekly news roundup. I guess it's tri-weekly because we had... Never mind. My microphone keeps falling. Oh my god, I'm so sorry. I don't know what's happening. So first off, Cam Robinson dropped of all charges. He was, of course, under a felony and a couple misdemeanor charges because he had drugs and he stole a gun. But our charges were dropped, and there was a quote from the Attorney General of Louisiana, who was the person that released him, that got a lot of people on their nerves. Like, he said something like, along the lines, this is the direct quote, he said something along the lines of, like, I'm not going to punish two men. It was Cam Robinson and another teammate. My microphone! Stop it! I'm not going to punish two men who were outside sweating while we were all sitting in the air conditioning. That seems a little sketchy, doesn't it? Because that would imply that he's giving special treatment because they're football players. And that, of course, with the whole Jameis Winston thing, which turned out to be nothing, but at the time, that was a big issue, that he was getting favoritism and not having to stand trial because he was a football player. So, no one really knows at this point if there's going to be any repercussions from Alabama. He's still suspended indefinitely, but this is a huge plus for Alabama if they're going to have Cam Robinson. If he had the felony charge, it would probably end his career, and he was a probable top 10 draft pick this upcoming season. So that's good for him. Hopefully it turns out that he wasn't guilty of these charges. It was a nonviolent crime, so I guess the Attorney General was maybe just a little lenient on that. Second, we have an interesting story out of the Big 12 and Baylor, of course. Apparently, Art Briles, he was talking with Baylor, and he had to, like, settle for his lawsuit or whatever. And one of the things that he promised to do was, like, go attend these meditation sessions with this victim and apologize to her. And he no-showed. So that's been getting on a lot of people's nerves. And rightfully so. I would, too. He promised he'd apologize to her for what the Baylor University did and what some of his football players did. And she kind of got the short end of the stick. Last episode, we had this story about, like, how these donors wanted to get Art Briles back. You've got to think that that's hopefully done now after this story. It's Art Briles not doing himself any favors if he wants to become a coach in the future for any school. He's kind of continually digging his own grave. And then also, speaking of the Baylor situation, the Big 12 put out a statement on Baylor. It was basically they want to have the full Pepper Hamilton report, and Baylor said, no thanks, we're a private university, we don't have to do what you say. I think Baylor probably will have to end up releasing it just because they'll be pressured into by the conference and the NCAA. Also, the NCAA said that they are not going to be punishing Baylor. It's a Title IX case. They're letting the courts do it, which is awesome. I'm so happy. They don't need any more recruiting violations. They've already lost half of their recruiting class for this upcoming year and most of their good players for this upcoming year. So they've had enough, Baylor has. And I'm glad that they're not punishing the players that didn't do anything. The players that did do these horrific crimes, they're going to have to pay for it in the court system and not by the team losing scholarships or bowl eligibility for a year. I think that's a really great thing the NCAA is doing, is actually just letting the government take its course and punish these kids that did these awful things instead of just taking away scholarships or something. So we also have this great story out of Nebraska that kind of ties into the whole awful Baylor situation. Brenda Tracy, who was at Oregon State when Mike Riley was the coach, she was the victim of some of the type of things that were going on at Baylor. And so, of course, the former Oregon State coach, Mike Riley, is now coaching at Nebraska, and he actually invited her to talk to the team about how it felt to have to be, like, silent about these things and how it was okay to be sorry. And she said that she hated Mike Riley for the longest time. Mike Riley, of course, only giving these players a one-game suspension. He said now that he regrets that and said he only knew that the players were arrested, released, and the charges were dropped, and he felt he had to do something. But since the charges were dropped, he didn't want to do anything more. He said that he regrets it now that he knows what happened. But it's actually really great, and more teams should do things like that, where they actually have someone come in and talk about the long-term effects of what this does to a person mentally in the long term. That's great that the Nebraska players, like, I don't see anything like this happening at Nebraska. The players have this thing in their mind how they can, like, almost relate, and they know that this is not okay, which is, well, I'd hope most people know that, but for any players who did, like, this is a fantastic thing for Nebraska University and for the future of college football, because I would love if we could stop hearing these awful stories about Baylor and just focus on football. That's all I want to do. And the less awful things that happen off the field, the more time we have to focus on the field. And that's what you love about college football, is the on-field stuff. So that's all I have to say about this. It's a great thing that Mike Riley did, and hopefully that all the Nebraska players learn from it, as hard as it probably was to hear her talk about it. I'd have to hope that they learn from it and will implement that into their lives in the future. So now is the time we are going to be doing some more over-under football schedules. Hooray, hooray, hooray. Our first one is TCU. They start off the season with 3 home games in a row: South Dakota State, Arkansas, and Iowa State. The Arkansas game will be a tough one, but I do see them picking up the win as it is at home, so I see them starting off the season 3-0. Next up, they travel to SMU. That does seem like a loss for TCU. For SMU, sorry. I get my U's mixed up, I guess. SMU, definitely going to be in probably the bottom 25 teams in the country, and I definitely don't see TCU losing to them as long as I don't mess up my words. Next up, they have Oklahoma at home, and I do see Oklahoma as one of the best teams in the country. TCU is another top team, and this is just a tough game because I do see Oklahoma as having some problems. We'll talk about that later. But in the end, I think Oklahoma will pick up the win against TCU. Oklahoma does seem to be an early pick in my mind for a possible college football playoff team, and we'll see, but once my college football previews start coming out, I would watch out for Oklahoma, because I do see them beating TCU here in a close game. That'll be a fun game to watch. Next up, they have at Kansas. They'll win that game. And they have at West Virginia. That seems like a pretty easy win. Texas Tech at home. I see them taking care of business there. Then they've got at Baylor, and this is where things get messy. You never know what type of effect off-the-field issues will have on the Baylor program. For now, tentatively, I'll say it's a Baylor win because it's at Baylor. You never know if teams are going to respond positively or negatively, and you can't respond positively to these kind of things. It can kind of unify the team, or it can break them down knowing that some of their locker mates, like, did these awful things. So it just depends how Baylor reacts to them. For now, I'd say that's probably a loss for TCU. And then we've got Oklahoma State at home. That's going to be a tough one. We'll say they win that game at Texas. Texas, I have no idea how Texas is going to be. I have them ranked upper 30s, lower 40s, but they could be anywhere. They could be a lot worse than that, or they could be a lot better. They could be a top 25 team. Texas is kind of a wild card this year. And then they've got Kansas State, and that is a win. So overall, I would say they're going to go somewhere around 10-2. And, I completely lost my train of thought. So they're going to go somewhere around 10-2. I'm going to pull up. I actually didn't pull up what their over-under win total was, so I'm going to look that up. And it is DCU 8. So I do think they'll go over 8 wins. They might drop the game to Oklahoma State. They might lose at Texas. And then at Baylor game to toss them as well. But overall, I'd say they're probably going to win over 8 games this year. Next up, Florida State. They are in the ACC, and their over-under for this year is 9.5. Florida State's one of those teams that almost is going to get, is not getting enough attention, and I think they're a top 5 team. It's just because Clemson was so good this last year that I don't even know. Florida State is kind of almost flying under the radar in a way. They're going to be, like, probably the top, in my top 5 when I do my rankings for this year, my final top 25. I'm sorry. I'm, like, really tired right now. I just woke up. It's, like, 8 a.m. But Florida State, I cannot seem to find their schedule. There we go. Okay. They start off the year at home against Ole Miss. That'll be a great game to watch. That's on Labor Day, I believe. And then they've got Charleston Southern and at Louisville. That's a tough, not the Charleston Southern game, but home against Ole Miss and then at Louisville. That's a tough, like, 1-2 punch. I think they'll go 2-0 in those games, but they'll both be close. Then they've got at USF, North Carolina, and then they've got at Miami. I say they win all 3 of those games. Wake Forest seems like a win. Clemson, I think they'll win against Clemson. Looking at the schedule, Florida State could go 12-0. I'd say they'd probably go 11-1 or 10-2. But 12-0 is a possibility, and I do definitely see them going over 9.5 wins. Like I said, 12-0 is a real possibility on this thing. I don't see any games that they probably won't be favored in. They've got a lot of chances to lose. Ole Miss, at Louisville, UNC, at Miami, Clemson. They have a tough schedule, but most of the hardest ones, Ole Miss, UNC, and Clemson, they're all at home. So, I don't know. I think Florida State has definitely a good chance to go 10-2, 11-1. And maybe, just maybe, they could go 12-0. Next up, we've got everybody's favorite team, not really, Notre Dame. So, I don't know if Notre Dame's thing will be in the ACC or in Independence. So, let's look for that. There we go. A Notre Dame, 9.5 wins is their over-under. And, personally, I'd say Notre Dame is a top 10 team, maybe a fringe top 15 team. I'd say top 15 is probably a better accurate representation. They start off the year with 2 games that they should win at Texas and Nevada at home. I say they probably go 2-0 in those games. Then they've got Michigan State at home. I do think they'll take care of business. Then they've got Duke at Syracuse and at NC State. Win. Stanford at home. Stanford, that's another team that I don't hear a lot of people talking about them, but I think they'll be a top 10 team this year. I think they have a nice chance. Oregon's not as good as they normally are. But it's in South Bend. That's definitely a game I want to tune into Saturday, October 15th, 7:30 on NBC. But I don't know. We'll put that as a toss-up for now. Maybe leaning towards Notre Dame. They've got Miami at home. They have a span where they have 5 home games in a row. They play Navy and Army, of course. Miami at home, Virginia Tech at home. And they're at USC to close out the year. When you think about it, this schedule, I say, I don't know. They've only had, like, 1, 2, 3. They only have 4 road games. And only one of those is against, like, a real tough opponent. That's USC. And South Bend's a tough place to play. So I'd say they probably lose on the road to USC and maybe drop a home game somewhere in here. They face some pretty tough teams. Either way, they're going to get over 9.5 wins, whether they go 11-1 or 10-2. So all three of these so far I have going over the projected win total. So next up, we've got kind of a random one. We're going to do Missouri. I think someone requested this to me a few weeks ago. I don't know. I wrote this down 3 weeks ago. So thank you if you requested to me. Anyway, Missouri is a type of team. They're in the SEC East. It's hard to judge the SEC East. I have Missouri pretty much in the middle of the pack of college football, like in the 50s, I guess, in my rankings, maybe the 60s. They start off the year at West Virginia. I don't see them beating. Oh, I should probably say their over-under is... Okay, their over-under is 5.5. So, start off at West Virginia, then Eastern Michigan, then Georgia. I'll probably go 1-2 in those games. I don't see them beating West Virginia or Georgia. Then they've got Delaware State at LSU and at Florida. Again, 1-2. So they're at 2-4 right now. Then they've got Middle Tennessee, Kentucky, and at South Carolina. Those are three winnable games. South Carolina on the road seems tough. That's kind of a toss-up. Middle Tennessee and Kentucky at home, though, I think they'll take care of business there. And then they've got Vandy at home. I'll say they probably win that game. At Tennessee, no. And then Arkansas at home, no. I'd say they're probably going to go under. I'd say probably 4-8 is a probably accurate representation of this team. They're probably going to beat East Michigan, Delaware State, Middle Tennessee, Kentucky, and Vanderbilt. So that would be 5 wins, 5-7, which is still under. So we have our first under of the day. And that comes in the form of Missouri. Sorry, whoever requested Missouri. But I have you keep going under 5.5 wins. Next up, we've got Michigan. They are over under 10 wins. 10. And Michigan is one of those teams. They're like the hype train. Tennessee, Washington, Michigan. These are the hype train teams. We don't really know if they're going to be good. But it sure seems like it based on, like, spring practices and recruiting, because they don't really have proven pieces. But it's kind of just like a lot of people jump on the bandwagon. We might as well, too. Anyway, Michigan starts up the year. Hawaii, UCF, Colorado, Penn State, Wisconsin at Rutgers. 6-0. They've got and then Illinois at home. So that's 6 out of 7 of their first games are at home. They're going to go 6-0 in those games. Then their only away game there is at Rutgers. So they're starting off the year 7-0. They've got Maryland, Indiana, 9-0. And now we get to the three interesting games. At Michigan State, at Iowa, and at Ohio State. I have Michigan right now ranked in the top 10. I don't have them like number 5 or number 3 like a lot of people do. I have them ranked at number 8, ooh, a little spoiler alert for my way too early college football predictions. But right now, at this time, I have them ranked number 8. So, we established they're going to win 9 games. Then they've got, okay, at Michigan State's the first one. I don't see them beating Michigan State on the road. The thing is, their three toughest opponents are all on the road, and that's unfortunate. Then they've got Iowa. That's a tough one. I'll leave that up in the air for now. And they're not going to beat Ohio State on the road. So I say they lose to Ohio State and Michigan State. And they probably also lose to Iowa. So they're going to go 9-3. I have Michigan goes 9-3. That is under 10-2. And therefore, Michigan is under. So I had 3 overs, and now we're on the streak of 2 unders. Next up, Texas A&M. We will see here. What I see A&M doing. The over-under for the Aggies of Texas A&M, as I pull up their schedule real quick, is 6. So, expected to just make a bowl game. So, I have Texas A&M ranked a lot higher than most people, it seems. I have them ranked in the low 30s. Just to start, this is, of course, tentative. I'm probably going to change by the time I post my 1 to 128 rankings. But UCLA, to start off the year, at home, they probably lose that game. It's UCLA I think UCLA is a team that could make a Power Six bowl. New Year's Six, that's what they're called. New Year's Six bowl. But not a lot of people are talking about that. Then they play Prairie View A&M. That's a win. At Auburn, I say they probably lose at Auburn. So that's 1-2 to start the year. Not looking too hot for Texas A&M. Then they run Arkansas at home. I think they'll win that game. Although Arkansas is tough. I have them like on fringe top 25 team. At South Carolina, they'll win that one. Tennessee at home. Ooh, that's tough. Tennessee at Texas A&M. Tennessee probably is going to pick up the win there. So I have Texas A&M starting off the year at 3. No. I have Texas A&M starting off the year 3-3. Then they've got at Alabama. They're not going to win at Alabama. So that's 3-4. New Mexico State, that's a win. So that's 4-4. At Mississippi State. Mississippi State, like most teams in the SEC, other than the power teams and the awful teams, pretty much everybody else is a fringe top 25 team, like Mississippi State. Mississippi State is kind of on the lower tier, though. I feel like they're going to drop off this year, as they were in UC years. They lost Dak Prescott and everything. So, you know, I'm saying Texas A&M probably beats Mississippi State on the road, so that increases them to 5-4. Then they play Ole Miss at home. I don't see them beating Ole Miss. So that's drops them down to 5-5. They've got UTSA at home. That's 6-5. And then they've got LSU at home. I think they'll lose that game. So they're going to end up at 6-6, right at even. So that one basically didn't even count. I texted them going right down, not over, not under, straight at even 600. So next up, we just did Texas A&M. So why don't we just do plain old Texas. Hopefully Texas and Texas A&M play in the future. That would be fun. But for now, we're going to have to focus on which one we think will do better on the over-under. So I had Texas A&M doing flat out 6 wins. Texas is win total over-under is 6.5. So we'll see how they do. Notre Dame start off the year. They're not going to win that. I'm sorry. Then they've got UTEP. They'll win that. At Cal. That's a tough one. I say they probably win. At Cal, I actually don't know. I don't know. We'll put that as a toss-up for now, but I think they'll win. Then they got at Oklahoma State. Oklahoma State, that's probably not going to be a win. So they're sitting at, let's say, 2-2. They beat UTEP and Cal and lose to Notre Dame and Oklahoma State. They got Oklahoma next. That's another loss. Iowa State at home, they'll win that. So we're at 3-3 now. At Kansas State, K-State's got some pieces. Of course, they got one of the best coaches in the nation. But when you think about it, Texas's strengths against Kansas State's weaknesses, I've got to say probably Texas is going to pick up the win. At Kansas State. Next up, we've got Baylor at home. I don't think they beat Baylor. They're not at Texas Tech. They'll probably win that game. They'll probably beat Texas Tech. So, right now they're at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 wins. Then they've got West Virginia at home. I do see them beating West Virginia at home. At Kansas, that's a win. And then TCU is a loss. So I have them finishing up at 7-5, which is over 6.5. Hooray, Texas. You finish over 6.5. Next up, we have Arizona. That's going to be our next one. We just had Texas and Texas A&M. And now we're going to go to Arizona, traveling to the Pac-12. And the thing about Arizona football this year is that it's not that they necessarily have such a difficult time. It's just Rodriguez is always going to have a good offense. Rich Rodriguez. Arizona is always going to have a good offense. The thing is, the defense. They're probably going to be a blitz-first type of team. And they have 8 games in Arizona. I guess I'm counting the versus BYU game as a home game because it's in Glendale. So That's going to be tough. I don't see them going much past 7 wins that they got last year, but let's break down their schedule and see exactly how many wins I think they'll get. The over-under for Arizona, just in case you didn't know, the over-under for Arizona is, in fact, 6 wins. So, you're starting off with BYU. They lost their coach this year, BYU did, and I'm going to say they get the win. Then they brought Grambling State, Hawaii. That's 3-0. Arizona starts out 3-0. Good work. Then they've got Washington at UCLA and at Utah. And those seem to be 3 straight losses. Then they have USC at home. I don't see them beating USC at home. USC is going to be one of those teams. Might be a little overhyped, but I do see them beating Arizona. Then they've got Stanford at home. Once again, I don't see them winning that game. At Washington State, that seems to be another loss. Washington State, really underrated team this year. So I have them going 3-6 so far. So they're, at best case, going to be a push. Colorado, I say them, they're probably going to beat Colorado. They've got Arizona State. Then they've got at Oregon State. At Oregon State, I could see them winning that. Oregon State is falling into Kansas levels of bad. Then they have Arizona State. So it's at home. I'm going to say they use their blitz and they get the win. That's a Friday night game. 6-6. It's a push again. It's our second push. And we just did Arizona, so why not? Let's just go straight in to Arizona. Sorry. Oh, my God. Let's go straight into Arizona State. So the thing about Arizona State is they've been doing pretty well until last year. They kind of took a step back. They had a losing record after having, I think, back-to-back 9-win seasons. I think they had a 9-win and then a 10-win. I'm not positive, though. They didn't have a good quarterback. Their offensive line was shaky. And they have a bad secondary. So, I don't know. They're still a good team. But just compared to recent time, they don't return their quarterback. They return 1 out of 5 offensive linemen. And their top secondary players are gone. So, that's the problem with Arizona State. Is they're good, but the problem is, do you know if their holes are going to be too big for them to overcome? So, their over-under is 5. 5 wins for Arizona State. They start off the win with a win against Northern Arizona. Then they have Texas Tech. I do see them. Texas Tech is a tough one. You never really know where they're going to go. But I'm going to say they win that game. At UTSA, they'll probably win that one, too. So that's 3-0 to start the year. Then they've got Cal at home. I say they win that. 4-0 to start the year. And they've got a tough stretch at USC and then UCLA back-to-back. Drop that to 4-2. Then they've got at Colorado. At Colorado. I think they win that one. So that's 5-2. Then they've got Washington State at home. You know what? Washington State at home. That's actually a really hard game to predict. But I'm going to say they win that one. So that's 6-2. So we're already over 5. They've got at Oregon next. I don't see them winning that one. They've got Utah at home. I think they won that one. No. Utah, like I said, sneaky good team. Almost stuck up on me. But Utah on the road. No, actually, it's Utah at home. So, God, I don't know much. I feel so dumb right now. I think they'll lose that one. So they're 6-4. I don't even know. 7-4. I can't count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 6-4. They've got at Washington, that drops it to 6-5, and then at Arizona. 6-6, which is over 5 wins. And Arizona State is an over. So you just did Texas Tech A&M, and then we get to Arizona State. Let's do Cal and Stanford, because why not? Then we'll finish this up with the most, with the biggest toll on each of the 10, but each of the 5 best teams in the country. Cal, stay in the Pac-12. Our Final Four are all Pac-12 teams. I just realized that. And Cal, there's not a lot of things that we know. Sonny Dykes, I would say he's probably on the hot seat. He's 14-23 in his 3 years as the coach. And he's lost his best players. But they bring in Marquise Stovall. He's a true freshman. Top receiver in the spring game. But like I said, they have talented, unproven players. The question is, how will Chase Forrest perform now that Jared Goff is gone? Jared Goff, of course, top pick in the NFL draft. We'll see. I don't think they'll be able to replace him, but will they be able to do enough that they won't miss him so much? Hawaii to start off the year. I feel like every team I've done, there's been at least four teams now that have played Hawaii just this episode. Poor Hawaii. I see them lose again. They're one of the 5 to 10 worst teams in the country. Sorry, Hawaii fans. At San Diego State, they'll take care of business against Hawaii, but San Diego State is a Mountain West team, and I think they'll win the Mountain West. I don't think Boise State will. Boise State and San Diego State, at least, I don't know if San Diego State will definitely win the Mountain West, but they'll definitely put up a good contention against Boise State. And for that, oh my god, sorry, I say they lose. Texas next. Texas, it's at home, but I think I already did Texas and I said they beat Cal. So that's 1-2 to start the year. At Arizona State, they'll lose that. That's 1-3. Utah, then, that's 1-4. Cal, like I don't know if I mentioned this, but their over-under is 4. Then at Oregon State, that brings them to 2-4. And then after that, they have Oregon, USC, Washington, and Washington State, Stanford, and UCLA to finish off the year. They're not going to get to 4 wins, guys. I'm sorry. Cal is not getting to 4 wins. They lost the best players. Goff is gone. The replacement, no one really knows. Sorry, but Cal, you're not going to win anything this year. I guess you're winning something, but you're not going to get over 4 wins. Which is when we take it to your arch rival, Stanford, whose over-under 4 wins this year is 8.5. Start off the year with Kansas State at home. I say they'll win that game. Then they've got USC at home. I'll say they win that game too. Then they have at UCLA. This is a tough one. I think Stanford's a better team than UCLA, but it is on the road. At the end of the day, I'm going to have to give the edge to UCLA as it's on their turf at the Rose Bowl. Then they have at Washington. I don't see them winning that game. So we're starting off 2-2. Washington State at home, that's a win. So 3-2. At Notre Dame, that's going to be a fun game. Notre Dame, Stanford. Anyway, I see Stanford losing that game. It's at Notre Dame and South Bend. So that's 3-3. They're going to beat Colorado. They're probably going to beat Arizona. They're going to beat Oregon State. They might even beat Oregon on the road. I think they'll beat Cal on the road, too, and Rice. So I think they're going to go 6-0 to end the year. And the question is, did they do enough in the first half? So Kansas State, we'll have to break that down. So USC at UCLA, at Washington, Washington State, at Notre Dame. That's a real tough stretch. They're going to probably get 2 wins out of that stretch, plus the Kansas State win earlier. So that would be 9-3. And that is over. That is over. So, Stanford is over. And that is our last one for today. And now, we are going to do the weakest positions on each of the top 5 teams in the country. I was planning on doing the top 15. Then I knocked down to the top 10. And finally, I'm doing the top 5. Because this episode has almost gone 50 minutes by now. On second thought, guys, I'll just leave it for the next episode. This one has gone so long. Thanks for watching, guys. Goodbye.